And welcome back to the Locker Room. We're chatting today with Alec Potts, who's the local archery star now on the Olympic team. How are you going, Alec?
Oh, not too bad. Good to be back.
Yes. Nice smile on the face. Must feel very relieved because the last time we've talked, you knew that the team had three positions, had a team, but you weren't quite sure whether you were going to be one of the three or not because you had a bit of work to do at that stage.
Yeah, it's still a very surreal experience completing it all and knowing I'm part of the team now. I don't think it's fully sunk in, which I'm appreciative of because, you know, it's still, I suppose at this stage, keeping everything in perspective and knowing that we're still going over there to perform a job. It's not just, you know, making the team's the first step.
Mm. And you were in the World Cup events. You better let us know how they went, because I know at least in one of them you did very well and had a third finish, I think. Was that Shanghai?
Yeah, in Shanghai. So going into China, which is our first World Cup of the year, that was had a weighting of 40% of our Olympic selection. So all my training from probably December onwards was geared towards performing well in that ranking round. And I shot the highest ever international score by an Australian, which was 1 point below our domestic national record.
Which is held by one of your teammates.
Yes, yeah, so, by Ryan.
Yeah, Ryan Tyke.
And I later found out that was 3 points under the junior world record as well. So glad I didn't know that at the time. Yeah. I'm appreciative of that.
And it was a score of 685, I believe.
Yeah.
So what sort of score do you need to shoot, do you reckon, to have a chance of a medal at the Olympics?
685 would put you at least top six in the ranking rounds.
Nice.
You want to be kind of hitting the 660, 670 mark to be the top half, top quarter of the field kind of thing.
Mm.
But anywhere, like, there's only know of four Australians ever that have shot 680, so to be in that group's a really nice confidence boost going into the games.
And the other World Cup events?
Yeah, I went to Turkey just over a week ago.
Timing getting out of Turkey, perfect.
Yes, yeah, that was very lucky, very fortunate about that. Yeah. But that was good as well. I mean, I shot really well in my first match. We shot awesome in teams. Average first start to the ranking round, but was able to pull it back in the second half. I think I finished 110th in my first half and then 13th in my second half, which averaged out to about 30th or 31st, I think.
Yep.
But there was 230 or 240 archers there all trying to get the last minute Olympic spots. So it was a really, really tight competition.
And was there a third event? We've had Shanghai and Turkey, or does that cover the...
That's it that for World Cups that I'm competing in this year. Yeah.
All right. Now, next thing, we had a look at your Facebook page, and here's a photo of the ticket. Qantas, Alec Potts, Olympic team. Now, you get that delivered. What's the feeling there?
Well,
you like your HSC result.
something like that. It was, it came in the posts bent and it was raining, so the bottom half was wet. So it wasn't exactly Hollywood moment, I suppose. But because you follow the selection process so closely, you kind of know where you're sitting, but you don't really want to believe it in case you've missed some little clause somewhere or you haven't worked out your percentages right. So I thought I was in, but just to finally, I wouldn't let myself believe it till I had it in my hand in writing. And nice. So to get that was just, a very surreal experience.
So we've got the lead up now. You've got 5 weeks, really, for the games, although you're there a bit earlier. What do you do over the next couple of weeks?
As far as what I've done, so I've only got another week at home. The rest of stuff's in training camp. So at home, I've just been doing usual training. Mm-hmm. Nothing different, I suppose. Not doing too hard in the gym or doing too much cardio or anything, just to try and not get injured before the games. And then we've got 11 days in Taiwan as of tomorrow. 7 days back in Brisbane. A week at home, and then off we go to the games. So just working on team stuff. And
you just mentioned cardio. I know that Greg and Mick want to get in here, but you mentioned cardio training. Now, is that my understanding? Some cardio training in the winter biathlon is so they can control their breathing and their heart rate in between their shots when they do that. Is it the same type of thing in archery?
It's difficult because some of the top archers aren't exactly the fittest on the field, but they can still pull it together. Yeah. But I think it's an untapped area, because especially for us in Australia, every single tournament we go to, like half the time we're in Europe, spend 20 hours on the plane to get there. Everyone else spends 5 or 6, you know? And I think it, especially for us, we really need to be able to get off that plane, recover the fastest, and even just dealing with any bugs or viruses on the way over. So I think having that fitness is really good to be able to bounce back, get off the plane and get into competition.
And speaking of that, Alec, I understand that there's three male archers in the Australian team are yourself, Ryan Tyack and Taylor Worth, and that your respective ages are 20, 24 and 26. At the highest level of competition, does it tend to be a young man's sport?
It's difficult to say. I think usually, historically, those in the kind of mid to high 20 age bracket have been the most competitive. But I mean, our reserve, I think, is 42 or 43 now, and he was still putting down scores that would be easily competitive and possibility to win a medal overseas. I mean, it's not... I think it gets harder as you get older, but by no means you're out of the running once you hit that kind of late 30s, 40s stage.
Now, we'll move straight to the games now, because Mick's been dreaming what it would be like to be there, and he's thrown up a whole lot of interesting thoughts that he wants to put to you.
Archery, Alec, is one of those unique sports that actually starts before the opening ceremony. Like, football's usually the one. Archery starts. Now, just explain the events that you'll be competing in and when they're on.
So for us, we go over and we compete as an individual and as a team. So we'll get there a week before, and then the morning of the opening ceremony, we'll be shooting our ranking round. So that'll set us from 1 to 64, and we'll determine our team position and our individual position. The day after that, we'll shoot in our team event, and that'll go right through to gold on that one day. Then there's 4 days following, which will have a number of matches from the 132 round all the way through to medal matches.
And will you walk the opening ceremony?
At this stage, no, just because of how close teams will be the next day. And if we're, you know, if we're in the stadium till 2-3 in the morning, mm-hmm. we have to get up at 8. We want to be as prepared as we can be the next day.
And you mentioned before about the scores that you put up to be competitive. Simon Fairweather won gold in Sydney. Now, your 685 as a score you said would good. What sort of score did he put up? Do you know that?
I believe it was around the 650, 660 mark. Obviously, 16 years on, scores have climbed even more. But, I mean, you know, if I could go there and replicate that score, I'd be over the moon. It's just having one of those days where everything works and everything clicks. But 670, 680 is the score to be at the moment.
And once all your events are over, will you stay in the village? Will you stay there until the end? Will you be there at the closing ceremony? What happens after you finish?
Definitely staying right till the end, because we'll have a good week or so afterwards to just get around the village and just enjoy the atmosphere and, yeah, definitely be part of the closing ceremony.
But you won't be firing off a few celebratory arrows or anything like that, will you?
No, I don't think you can. I know tennis players sometimes hit the balls into the crowd. I don't think shooting arrows into the crowd would be the best move.
You mentioned Simon Fairweather, which was in the Sydney Olympics. In that same event, Tim Cuttahy finished third, and he was just a schoolboy at the time. If you come across either of these two in your archery development the last few years at all?
I met Tim Cuttahy a few years ago at a tournament and also at a training camp. And Simon, I've had a lot to do more recently because he's been helping mentor me for preparation into Rio.
So they've sort of got a bit of a coaching role, or certainly Simon, you're saying, does.
Simon was national coach for a number of years in the lead up to London. And now he's actually started shooting again just on the side, I think. But they've both... They're just the most humble guys you will ever meet, considering the just incredible list of accomplishments behind them. So they're great ambassadors for the sport.
And Alec, some sports are played in front of noisy spectators, of course, while others, such as tennis, you know, demand almost complete silence, or the players spit the dummy. Where does archery sit in that regard?
Anywhere on the day, I suppose. You get luck of the draw. I mean, when we go to World Cups, if you're shooting... Especially in the preliminary matches, everyone's yelling, everyone's screaming. If you're competing against someone and they shoot a 10, you'll know they've shot a 10 because every single coach and person behind them will yell it at you. Right. So it's certainly, I mean, it can be dead quiet or it can be super noisy. It just depends on the day. But
so that's psychology from the opposition, is it? That the noise?
I think so, yeah. But
let you know that there's a bit of pressure on over there. That guy just shot well.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well,
yeah.
I think you're competing at the Sambadromo, which sounds pretty noisy, doesn't it? The Sambadromo in Rio.
Yeah, we're expecting it to be quite a noisy environment, but that's all right.
So is that a soccer ground or some kind? Or
that's the centre of Carnival in Rio. So that's where they have their big dances and parades.
Your
stuff
concentration will have to be 100% on them.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. A lot of talk about the Zika virus. Is that something that worries you or worries your family if you're going over there, or is that something that the overwhelming thing, I'm in the Olympics, I'm going to the Olympics, I might not get this chance again. Is that the overriding factor? Does Zika virus come into consideration for you at all?
Look, it came into consideration, but I mean, we've had so many talks with the Australian Olympic Committee and just the preparation that's gone into it. I mean, we're taking over so much repellent and nets, and I mean, we've taken every precaution that we can. And looking into it, it is mainly based in the deeper parts of Brazil, in the rainforest, and we're right on the coast where we're competing. So I think there's obviously, there's never not going to be a risk, but I think that we've taken every step that we can.
And just on the actual team itself, like you said, you compete on the first day for rankings in singles and in team event. What's a realistic chance of Australia winning medals in archery this year?
Our best chances as a team. I don't want to say we're going to go over and win gold. I mean, I know that we can, given the right day and if everyone works together. I mean, we've got Taylor's an Olympian, Ryan's a world champion, you know, I have my good days now and then. So if we all get together on the one day and everything just clicks, then I'm very confident we're capable of doing
well. So if you get to the final, how many teams are in the final?
So there will be 12 teams, I think, that go through. And then the final, you've got to win, I think, three matches to get through to a medal match. And then it'll just be a gold match and a bronze match. So as soon as you make a gold match, you're guaranteed a medal.
Fantastic.
And Alex, South Korea, I believe, seemed to be the team to beat, having won 11 of the last 16 gold medals on offer since Atlanta in 96. Why is it, do you think, that that country has been so dominant in the sport over the last two decades?
I think just depth for them. I mean, they have, you know, the guy who won the London Olympics didn't actually qualify to make this year's team. So it's just a crazy amount. Like, their top 50 shooters could all go to a World Cup and be competitive. So I think it's just depth that gives them that edge.
So it's just a very, very popular sport by the sound of things.
I believe it's their national sport, yeah.
Okay.
A little bit of history. The Olympics archery returned in Munich in 72, and Australia's been in them in every Olympics since then, which is fantastic. Little known fact, though, we were talking about this earlier, Mick and I, that going right back to Paris in 1900, there was a medal, and for a while there they thought that that was actually an archery medal, but when they looked in depth they found it was a shooting medal that a guy picked up. And it was back in the days, Michael.
And I think in the last Olympic Games, I'm pretty sure that archery was held at Lord's Cricket Ground.
It was at Lord's Cricket Ground last time round, correct, in London. Mm. And the shooting, though, had live birds, didn't they? Live pigeons.
Live pigeon shooting was an event.
Back in 1900. So,
I was going to say, not at London, by the name of it.
No, no, by the name of it, they thought it was to do with archery until someone actually did the research and found out, oh, hang on, that was part of a shooting medal. So,
well, you'd bring down a pigeon, wouldn't you, with a bow and arrow, Alec, if you were that way inclined?
Not intentionally, but I'm sure there's been a few close calls.
Now, it's pretty windy out there today. What's the impact of wind on archery?
Huge. Yeah. It doesn't take much to, you know, we've had days where, like in Brisbane when we were training before we went up to Turkey, we had days where we were aiming off the target. And I mean, that's all good and well if the wind stays constant, but when the wind drops and you're aiming off the target, I mean, it's just educated guesses basically is how you get through it.
So you're obliged to compete in all conditions?
Yeah, we don't stop unless there's lightning. Like no. Nothing will stop, so.
So for the Olympic distance, 70 metres, is that correct? Aiming at a target which is, 122 centimetres, so about a little over 4 feet in our old language, from 70 metres away. And it's got the circles, which we're all aware of. How many of those
do we have? You've got 11 scoring rings, so 10 to 1, and then there's an X ring in the middle.
And you'd be hoping, obviously, if you can get your batch on the middle one, which is... What colour of?
You want to hit the gold colour, we call
it. Gold, yep. Mm. Then that's the aim. But that's not a bad effort, Mick. 70 metres away, 4 foot target, and you're aiming right down the middle.
Yeah, no, it's, they make it look so easy, don't they? Just, Alec, how did a 20-year-old guy like yourself become an archer? Like, I think you might have already covered this before, but just for me, I wasn't at the last one, but I just want to know, how does a young guy like yourself become an archer?
I mean, it's one of those sports that you don't do on a Saturday and that's it. I mean, you either, once you're into it, you become addicted, I think. So I started when I was 12, and I mean, I haven't since the age of probably 13, 14, I've been shooting 6 days a week, and it just becomes this constant drive, I suppose, to want to compete and to want to better yourself. And it's just, I think especially being an individual sport, it's really one of those things you can just become addicted to and just have that constant drive.
And what's the pleasure that you derive out of it? Because, you know, there's so many different sports, as Mick's indicating at the moment, and you've settled on this one. What is it that archery gives back to you?
I think just it all comes back to you. Like, you can't, like, if I go to a tournament and my bow is not set up well and it doesn't shoot as well as I want it to, that's on me. You know, I set that bow up. If I go along and I don't perform as well because I haven't been training as much, that's on me. And it all comes back equally if I do well. Like, I went off in Shanghai and shot really well and thought, oh, great. So this, and this has been working. And that's because of what I thought up. So you come back to that intrinsic kind of desire to perform well, and you get that really good sense of satisfaction out of it.
Interesting. Now, the women's team hasn't had as much publicity. Now, I think they had one place, so they actually got a team place in the end.
We didn't send a team to Turkey, so we only have the one spot at the moment.
And have they confirmed that? Because it looked like Semra Ferguson was the front runner there. Has that been confirmed, that she's got that position?
I'm not sure. At this stage, there's still an appeal going on, so I'm not entirely sure of the results.
Yeah, that's what I was sort of hunting around for today.
And Alec, have you competed at Rio before? And, you know, is there an advantage in having competed at the venue previously?
We shot at the test event last year, and it was really good, actually. I think because we're in the Sambadromo, it's never going to get too windy. I mean, it will reach a point just because you're surrounded by concrete. And I think there is an advantage, just because we know, you know, even going into the range, we know where we leave our bows, we know, you know, where the practice range is, where the tournament field is. So I think there's a little psychological edge to having been there the year before.
And a homegrown advantage for the Brazilian shooters, do you think?
I suppose so. I don't know what the rules are or how often they've actually been training in that venue, but I mean, there's always going to be some advantage for the home country.
And do archers have a limited shelf life, so to speak, given, well, a competition shelf life, given that the enormous strain that you put on certain parts of your body, given the repetitive nature of the sport?
I think depending, you have to be really careful with your technique and with your balance and stuff as well. Like, I'm been very conscious of having regular fortnightly, weekly physio sessions, doing a lot of gym work, keeping everything balanced and trying to keep my body as balanced and normal as possible, really. But I think if you're conscious of it, you can last for, you know, easily into your 40s.
Yeah. Right, Alec, it's been absolutely fantastic talking to you on the locker room here. You're heading off this weekend, and best of luck. We probably won't have a chance to catch up with you between now and the Olympics. We will be following you all the way, and you'll be just the local boy. We love to see a few local guys getting involved in the Olympics. So it's been great chatting, and all the best.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me again.